You know, we sing this song about how the love of God remains. And some of us, it's good to hear that because we have lives that are like the person we're looking at. And the person we're looking at, Joseph, family against him, and no job, and no one in the whole country that believes what he believes. He has faith in God. And not one person that we know of in the whole country that he's in has the faith that he has. And as we look at him and maybe look at ourselves a little bit, we'll take this idea of what remains through everything, no matter what. And hopefully what we'll find is it's the love of God. It's God who loves me and God who loves you. And it doesn't matter the country. It doesn't matter the situation. It doesn't matter the job or the no job or the family or the no family. But it's the love of God. And that's one of the themes we see running through this entire story of Joseph. And so that's the series that we're doing. We're looking at this man, Joseph. And as we read through history and read about what it was like, everything was against him. He could never get a break. But we're using three words: pursue, persist, and prevail. Because somehow he does it. And by looking at him, maybe somehow we can do it too. So if you were with us last week, or maybe you know the story that, you know, there's musicals and DVDs and movies, all kinds of stuff about it. But it's a story about favoritism. He was the favorite. He paid dearly for it. It's about jealousy. His brothers were all jealous of him being the favorite. About, I think, stupidity. Probably made some mistakes. And the result was, we read, when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to Joseph. His own family, you know. So Joseph goes through, he has these dreams and he tells them and all of this. They hate him so much, they sell him as a slave and he gets taken to Egypt. That's the country he ends up in, where no one believes the way he does. And he's sold to this man named Potiphar, one of the Pharaoh's officials, captain of the guard. And as we looked at it, we realize he doesn't know what's happening. Have you ever felt like what is God, what are you doing? I don't know what's going on. What do you have a plan in all of this? Because this is not how I thought it would go. This is not my plan. And maybe somehow you had a plan and it's all gone and it's somebody else's plan, but not the one that I thought God was going to bring me. That's Joseph. No family, no nothing. He's sold as a slave. And as we looked at it last week, one of the lines we said, I'll put it out to you again because I think it has some merit for us, was this, that God can take a crooked stick and still draw a straight line. And what we even saw then is that God was working exactly the plan he wanted. And we think it has to be done with a straight stick, done with a ruler. That's the only way you can draw a straight line. But when it's God, there's crooked sticks all over. And God is drawing this straight line for Joseph. And that's what we see in his story. Even though Joseph can't see the whole thing, the Bible says it like this. We know that in all things God works for the good, for those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. Well, Joseph is going to meet another crooked stick in the story. And the crooked stick is going to put a temptation in front of him. The temptation to kind of leave the faith that he has said all along that he believes. So I want to read the story with you. I'll invite you to stand where you are and we'll take a look. We'll read the first section. I'll read it out loud. You can follow along. We'll just read the first section and then don't worry, we'll get to some of it as well. So Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. The Lord was with Joseph and he prospered and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. When his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. From the time he put him in charge of his household and of all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. So he left in Joseph's care everything he had. with Joseph in charge, he did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate. Now, Joseph was well-built and handsome. And you think, what? Like, how does that fit? It fits. Oh, it fits. And after a while, his master's wife took notice of Joseph in his well-builtness and his handsomeness and said, come to bed with me. But he refused. With me in charge, he told her, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he has entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you because you're his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her or even be with her. Go ahead and be seated. I want to talk with you about it. Some of you might think like, well, wait a second, that's not the end of the story. Absolutely not the end of the story. We're going to walk through that as well. But I wanted to start with you here. You and I might think as soon as the politics calm down, we want to go to Egypt. Don't you want to see the pyramids? You do, don't you? I want to go see the pyramids. My wife's like, let's go. Yeah, exactly. But now might not be quite the right time, right? Politically and all the persecution that's going on there. But it was not that way in that day, right? Joseph, he didn't want to go down to Egypt. He wanted to stay in the land that was this wonderful land. He wanted to stay in this land that was fruitful and where all his family and all of his people were. See, Egypt for him was everything that he didn't have. See, Joseph's a slave. There's nothing good about being a slave, right? He works for Potiphar, captain of the guard. Some people translate that as that he was the chief executioner. That might be true as well. And did you catch this? Jeff alluded to it too. The Lord was with Joseph. It says it four times. The Lord was with Joseph. He prospered. God was working in his life. And it wasn't Joseph saying, hey, look at me. Look at how good I'm doing. That was happening. Verse 3, when his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him his success in everything he did, that even his master noticed. See, they had, you know, they had like tons of gods. In fact, they had so many gods that they would combine them sometimes. Like you would have like a... You could have a wolf body with a snake head because they didn't want to dishonor the snake god and just have the wolf body or vice versa. So they would sort of combine all of these gods. And we think about like Ra, the sun god, and things like that as maybe the more, I don't want to say popular, that's not the right word, but you get the idea, more well-known. All of these gods, but Potiphar says, you know what, there's something different about Joseph. I think this God that he follows, that's different than everybody else, than anything else I've ever seen. And he's the one who says it's God. Somewhere along the way, Joseph let slip that he follows God. Somewhere along the way. Now, I don't know when he let him know. Probably not the first day. But at some point, as God brought blessing into his life, at some point he said, you know, God, or you know, Potiphar, I think this is the blessing of God in my life. See, not all of us are blurters. You know, when you blurt something out the first time you think it, we don't have to be blurters. But at some point to recognize that God is the one who's brought the blessing and brought the prosperity. So Joseph is in charge of everything. He goes from a slave to an assistant to sort of like an executive manager. He's still owned, but he's totally blessed. Everything's in his care. And I want you to see a couple of things in this, and then I want to tell you a couple of stories. Genesis 39:6. So he left, we read this. He left in Joseph's care everything he had with Joseph in charge. He did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate. And now Joseph was well built and handsome. And after a while, his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, come to bed with me. But look what takes place here. He refused with me in charge. He told her this whole thing. He's got all these reasons already in his head. Do you see that? He's like, well, no. He trusts me, and I don't want to betray the trust, and you're married to him, and that's another reason. The third reason is God. He's got this, it's like he's already decided. He's already decided what is going to happen in his life. And I want to, I guess, tell you about the difference between being decided and being decisive. So Levi and I got to go to a conference this week, Catalyst Conference, and these big wheel leaders from all over the country, and you know, they all have like churches of thousands, and they're all experts, and it's just a great experience to learn. And so as we're learning along the way, we're also eating along the way, and because you just have to. And so we walk out at lunch, and there's all these food trucks, and we have to decide what to eat. And so it's like, I don't know, what do you want? There's the lobster food truck. I guess everything's made out of lobster. There's the burger food truck, whose name I can't say in church. There's the waffle truck that serves like chicken and waffles and pulled pork in a waffle and all those kind of things. And there's like all these trucks out there. And so we ate pretty good. It was good along the way. But we had to decide. We walk out and it's like, wow, look at all these trucks. What are we going to eat? And in that moment, I don't know that on the first day, I think we were decisive. Well, maybe both days we were decisive in that we saw it and we're like, why do you want to do this? You wanted this. Let's do this. But let me have you think about food a different way. And maybe this will illustrate the difference between decisive and decided. If the doctor says to you, Levi, for your health, you're going to have to not eat red meat. Some of you, it's like no big deal, right? Some of you is like, it's a really big deal, okay? But let's say the doctor said to Levi, he hasn't said that, but let's say he did say, you can't eat red meat. Then when we walked out of the conference and we looked at all the trucks, there's the big burger truck, right? And he would just know, no, let's not have that. And because here's why. That would already be decided. See, decisive is what you do in the moment. When you have options and you make that decision. Decided is what you decide before you even get to the moment. See, Joseph, right? Potiphar's wife, she's wealthy. She has all of the great Egyptian skin products and makeup. She probably looks good. But Joseph, he's way back here. Way, way, way back before he was decided. No, I'm not going to betray the trust of the master. I'm not going to betray your marriage. And I'm going to do what's right. He was decided. He didn't wait until he was in the situation and go, oh, I don't know. That's being decisive. Look, being decisive is good, right? There's times when you're in line at whatever fast food restaurant of choice. You're at In-N-Out and you're there and Levi can't go if he can't eat meat. But if you're there and you think, well, do I want onions or not? Do I want gorilla? It's like you take too long and you just need to learn to be more decisive, right? But none of that ever matters, what you put on your burger. But what does matter is what you decide. So we're going to see the first strategy for Joseph on how to not trip and fall and make a mess in your life. The very first one is to be decided. Not to be decisive, to be decided. And so that's what he does. He had already decided, this is what I'm going to do. Now, there's more to the story, right? Although she spoke to, verse 10, she spoke to Joseph day after day. He refused to go to bed with her. This is verse 10. And then check out this next part. Or even be with her. See, he had been decided already. I'm not going to do that. But now he was also had also chosen to be strategic. Be decided, be strategic, right? It's like here's what you and I know. Going to bed with her, for him, or for anyone, is never step one. It's step three or four or five. And he knew, if I'm never with her, I will never be in bed with her. If I'm never with her, then I'll never be caught with her, and I'll never have my head removed from my body. That's what they would do in Egypt. If you get caught in that situation, is they would just take we have hieroglyphics and friezes and things that represent someone sitting here on their knees and the guy with a big old blade. He made the decision at step one. Well, before step one, he made the decision. And then in the moment, he had a strategy. He was never with her. It was as simple as that. Step one, be decided. Number two, be strategic. But I wonder what kind of excuses Joseph could have made if he wanted to. I mean, she was really good looking and he's a slave, right? He's never going to get married and raise his kids. Maybe this is the only, this is it, you know? I mean, at what point do you and I, maybe it's not sexual stuff, maybe it's something else, that we sort of give ourselves a little bit of freedom to maybe do something that maybe we wouldn't otherwise normally do? I wonder about that. I wonder about the things we might say, or the things we might do, or the things we might even think, the experiences we might get into where we would, instead of saying no, where we might say, well, you know, it's different for me in some way. Somehow it's okay if I do this. See, one of the things I want to talk with you about, I don't know that it's from Joseph precisely, but it's certainly in the Bible in some different ways, is this idea of what is it about you that would trip you? What is it about your life that would trip you up? So let me tell you a story about my friend. I won't say his name, but he's not part of the church, and I haven't seen him in years and from the past. We were at a church, and we were doing an event. And the event was all the guys were together. Guys get together a lot. They like to compete a lot. And so we were having a dart tournament. And so in the dart tournament, I'm competitive. There were teams of three. Okay? So in the teams of three, here's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking I'm just okay at throwing darts. I have decent hand eye, but, you know, I need somebody good on my team. And then whatever can be the third person, right? So I go to this guy, who we'll call Mike, and I said, so, Mike, you play darts? He's like, yeah. I'm like, are you good? He's like, yeah. I'm like, all right. So I have good, and I have whatever. I'm thinking, we're going to do this. We're going to take the tournament. So we get up there. I'm throwing, and we're taking turns and all that. Mike is horrible. He's terrible. I mean, he's missing the board. He's getting no points for us. But it's a church thing, right? So you're like, and I'm a pastor at the church. You can't say, dude, what's your problem? You stink at this. You totally lie. You'd be like, oh, dude, tough one. You do better next round. You know, trying to cheer. Yeah. It was terrible. It was awful. We were like last place. So I had me, and I had terrible, and I had whatever. So later, I go to his wife, and I said, so, or she asked, how did it go? Because the women were doing some other event, and we were all together, I think, at the end. And she goes, how's it go? I go, well, your husband, he said, I asked him ahead of time, are you any good at darts? And he's like, he said, yeah, I'm great. And I said, but he was terrible. And then she said this, no offense if this is where you're from. She said, oh, yeah, he's from, I think she said, it was somewhere in New York. I think it was Brooklyn. Oh, yeah, he's from Brooklyn. They think they're good at everything. No offense if you're from there. And I don't know if that's true of everyone from there, but that was true of him. He thought he was great at everything. And so he just said, oh, yeah, I'm great. That was his thing. Pride. That was his thing. And at darts, it didn't matter at all. But in some things, pride really matters. I don't know, like marriage, right? I'm more important. Or friendships. Or really anywhere where I think everything about me is better. I know more than anyone. And it even proved through the years, this was probably 15 years ago, it even proved through the years to destroy every relationship that he had. Well, what's your thing? What would your thing be? If there's something that if you let that go in your life, and the reason I ask you to identify it is not to sort of dump all the shame on you. We'll talk about that in a minute. It's instead for you to understand it and look at Joseph and say, wait, Joseph resisted some pretty heavy temptation. So how can I learn from him so I can find victory? Because God brought Joseph through. We're going to get to the end of the story and we're going to find out he didn't do it. What's your thing? We'll talk about it more here in just a minute. See, sometimes when we're presented with something in front of us that is our temptation, and I'll give you a list of things that maybe you can identify with. We use excuses. My case is somehow different. I was talking with Levi this week, and we called this exceptionalizing. It's not really a word, but we just made it up, and I'm going to make up a couple more words too. The sometimes we exceptionalize. We say somehow that doesn't apply to me in this situation. Okay, so let me help you. We read in the Bible that God's intention for sex is between a husband and wife in marriage. But we're dating and we love each other and we're going to get married, so we are an exception somehow to the fact that God says this is the context where that's designed to flourish and be everything that it should be. But there's exceptionalizing. Sometimes we say, well, but in my case, there's exceptional circumstances. Sometimes we minimalize. It's okay that I do whatever my thing is. It doesn't really hurt anyone. I mean, I just, it's, you know, the Bible isn't against someone having a drink, okay? So I understand that. But the Bible is really clear, and people who let it rule their lives get out of control. And next thing you know, it's a mess everywhere. But sometimes people minimalize it and say, well, it's not really hurting anybody else. It's not really... You know, it's just me, and I know I should probably cut down, and I know the family members tell us we should really cut down, but I, you know what, it's just not that big of a deal, minimalizing. Sometimes we, you ready for this word? I made this up. It's totally not a word. Deconsequencifying. I know, right? It's a great word, deconsequencifying. Sometimes we deconsequencify. I know, you're like, if I had any idea what he said, I might agree. But you know what deconsequencifying is? It's when the consequences aren't apparent, and so we don't even want to look at them, and so we pretend they don't even exist. Deconsequencify. There are consequences, but we don't want to look at them. So we pretend that they don't exist and aren't part of it. There's, of course, rewardifying. That was Levi's. Rewardifying. And this is it. Ready? I've had such a hard week or a hard day, so it's okay for me to do this. She made me so mad I couldn't not tell her. Off. Right? You know what? He's been a jerk to me, right? Time after time after time. So, you know what? It just made me feel good to let loose, to rewardify myself. I've had a long, hard week. I've resisted this sin for so long that somehow doing it is the reward. This is the stuff that goes in some people's heads, at least. Apparently in mine and Levi's, it does. Maybe you're like, wow, it's a mess up there. The Joseph story. One day, verse 11, he went into the house to attend his duties. And none of the household servants were inside. See, he'd already decided, I'm not doing that. And he had even been strategic. I'm never going to be alone with her. That's his strategy. He had a specific strategy to make sure step five never happened, and that was don't do step one. Don't ever be alone with her. But she's powerful. And one day he went into the house to attend to his duties, and none of the household servants was inside. She caught him by the cloak. Kind of think of it like as an over cape kind of a garment, and said, come to bed with me. But he left his cloak in her hand and ran out of the house. He ran. When she saw that he had left his cloak in her hand and had run out of the house, she called her household servants. We don't know where they were at the time. Look, she said, this Hebrew has been brought to us to make sport of us. He came in here to sleep with me, but I screamed. When he heard me scream for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house. She kept his cloak beside her until his master came home. And then she told him the story, that he was slave. Right? Racism. That you brought us. Right? It's your fault, husband. Came to me to make sport of me. And that really that's the root of that is the sexual attack. it's not sport like, you know, we would think of sport. It's really a, it's not quite as strong a statement as we would use the word rape for, but that's really the essence of what it leads to. But as I screamed for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house. When his master heard the story of his wife told him, saying, "This is how your slave treated me." He burned with anger. See, here's the third strategy. For the thing that gets you, the thing that can be your undoing in life, we can look at Joseph's and say, he didn't let it become his. He was decided, he was strategic, and he knew when to run. Right? He knew, I got to run here, right now, I got to run. Physically run. Don't be in the situation. The Bible tells us it's a good strategy, especially about sexual stuff. Flee from sexual immorality. All other sins a man commits are outside his body. But he who commits sins sexually sins against his own body. So what should we run from? How about this? Run from the person that we know we're mad at because we might fly off the handle and say something we're going to regret. How about this? Run from that TV show that gets you angry and riled up, and then you're going to go take that out on someone. How about run from that TV show that makes you jealous of what they have? I wish I had that. Why don't we live in a house like that? Why don't I have a job? Why don't I have the success like that? Run from the cable channel that just crosses over the line with that sexual stuff. Joseph paid for doing what is right. He would have paid more for doing what is wrong. So I'm not going to tell you, if you decide what's right and do it, it will always be amazing. We will not sing the song. You know the song. Don't you know the song? Everything is awesome, right? Everything is great when you're part of the team. Everything is awesome. If you don't know that, you're like, wow, he makes up words and he just lost it right there in that moment. Okay, it's the Lego movie song. I have not seen it. Have any of you seen the movie or heard that song? Tell me if you've heard the song before. Okay. All right. So, listen, you and me, whatever your thing is that's going to trip you, if you're going to be serious about it, whether it's because you don't want to betray the trust of someone in your life like Joseph, or because you don't want to betray God, or because you just know it's wrong, it's not always awesome. For Joseph, it was not awesome. He gets caught and he gets put in prison. He was running the household and the farms. They put him in charge of the house and the fields. So all of the farms, all of the employees, everybody he's in charge of. Everything's great and he does what's right. So we don't want to say, well, do what's right and everything will always turn out. But I do want to say a couple things. God was with Joseph. It said four times in this section that he prospered, that he was blessed by God. God always blesses those who serve him. God always blesses. It doesn't mean he will prevent any hardship from coming your way, because the world is not necessarily friendly to those who will choose what's right. The world is not friendly to those who will choose to live a righteous life. But God always blesses those who choose him. A couple more things. I won't make up any more words, I promise. Maybe your thing is like this. Maybe it's just like this in your life. I got to read verse 21 first, I guess. Did I read verse 20? Hang on. Verse 20. Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. We have to just say this really quick. Why didn't he kill him? Why didn't Potiphar kill Joseph? What do you think? Why didn't he just kill him? He's a slave. When it says Potiphar burned with anger, who do you think he was angry at? We don't know. All we know is that he's chief of the guard. He goes like this and somebody's head comes off for exactly what Joseph had done. But he didn't kill him. Why not? Who was he really mad at? A lot of the experts in language, say he was mad at his wife because she tried to trap his best employee. And so rather than kill him, he was going to at least preserve her, his life. But he couldn't quite go after his wife on this because he didn't have the evidence. So Joseph goes to prison. The Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in the prison. And he was made responsible for all that was done there. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. God met him in the moment. God's kindness, God's favor. Joseph ran into the crooked stick, Potiphar's wife. But God was still drawing a straight line. So, I don't know what your thing is, but let me show you a fun video about, or that I hope will help you think about what is yours. So, if you guys are ready, we'll play this.
Sure. All right, here's the deal. Marshmallow, for you. You can either wait, and I'll give you another one if you wait, or you can eat it now. When I come back, I'll give you another one, so then you'll have two. But stay in here and stay in the chair till I come back, okay? All right. I'm gonna go do something and then I'll come back.
It smells yummy. It smells really good.
It's up to you. You can have it now or you can wait. Okay? I'll be back. Stay in the chair. Okay? Okay. Leave and then I'll come back, okay? So you can either eat it right now or you can wait. Either way, okay? Okay. How'd you do? Did you do good? You did?
Yeah.
You wanted to eat it, didn't you? Yeah. So did I tell you I'd give you another one? Okay, now you can have both. You need them.
So, you know I'm going to say it, right? What's your marshmallow? Right? You knew I was going to go there. God knows. God knows what your marshmallow is. He knows the thing that's like, oh! He knows. One author calls this a signature sin. And I didn't want to use that too early in the message as if it's because it's, well, it's, it can be so sort of guiltifying. Ha, made another word. I guess I lied earlier. But what's your marshmallow? What's the thing? What's the thing that you need to be here and you need to say, you know what? I need to be decided about this. I need to be strategic about this. And so I need to know what situations I need to run from. And maybe it's the sexual stuff. Look, God's plan with the sexual stuff is not to keep you from having fun. It's to keep you from having regrets. That's what it's for. God has created this. He's created us to have intimacy with Him. Not in any weird sort of a way, but in a spiritual union where we experience this incredible relationship with Him. And then to experience an intimacy in marriage, which is a complete giving of ourselves. And we can do that when we haven't given it away to everyone else before we get there. See, God's plan is not to get rid of our fun or prevent that. It's to prevent our regrets. Maybe it's drugs, alcohol kind of stuff. Maybe it's envy. Maybe it's a secret judging. You know, I got this. I was on the way to this conference, driving along. There's this big old white van. It's in the carpool lane. There's a double yellow line and another double yellow line. And it comes across the first double yellow lines as a motorcycle's coming. And it starts to get across the second set and then goes back. And you know what? It said blank church on the side. And I'm like, idiot. I mean, I didn't say it out loud because if I say it out loud, then people are going to be like, wow, you know, I can't practice saying things out loud by myself because then I'm going to say them in front of people. You too, by the way, it slips out sometimes when I'm with you. But so a little while later, I'm in my lane where he's going to the conference, right? So a little while later, I'm in my lane and there's this little white line in between us. And what does he do? He comes back over again. And I'm like, oh, man, you know, he had to take the name off his church van. You know who said that? The guy whose license plate says God's House, right? I'm the guy who says you guys should take that off because you're a bad witness for Jesus. I'm a closet judger. Sometimes I just do that. Maybe it's not my biggest thing, but it's one of those things that I need to know that I need to work on. Just sometimes even judge what we should be judged on ourselves, you know. What is it, envy, lying? When you tell someone you're going to be there, but you know you won't, just because you want to make it look good, like you're going to be there. It's called lying. So what if you're here and you say, I've blown it. Yeah, we had some laughs, and I learned some words, and I see how Joseph, he made it through and didn't do it, and he's in charge again, but that's not where I'm at. And I say, yeah, this was fun, and I learned some things that I feel bad now. Let me give you a couple of quick things. Joseph is going to deliver God's people, the Jews, into Egypt, and then God is going to use him to deliver them out of Egypt later. Not Joseph, but God is using Joseph as part of that whole plan. And Joseph is wrongly accused. And somewhere in the back of your head, that might be an echo of Jesus. Wrongly accused. Also, the deliverer of people. For Joseph, it was to deliver to physical life. For Jesus, it's to deliver for spiritual life. A couple quick things. If you're feeling that, how do we stay decided? How do we move forward? How do we find victory? Number one, recognize forgiveness of sin that Jesus is offering you right now. Number two, recognize that there's no long-term hope for success over sin apart from the Spirit of God in your life. The Bible says, for God did not give us a spirit of timidity, but a spirit of power and of love and of self-discipline. That's good news. That means you have the power of God in you. If you've invited Christ into your life and he's resident in your life by his Spirit, this is the Spirit you have. It's great news. It's great news. That means whatever was last night or last week is last night or last week is not today. This is great news. First Corinthians 10:13. No temptation has seized you except what is common to man, and God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear, but even now, when you are tempted, he will provide a way out. You know what that means? It means you have the power in God, and you have the way out because he's planned it and orchestrated it, that with God's help, whatever your thing is, you can find victory in it, but not by yourself and not on your own. See, we have these communion tables up today, and I'll stop with this. And sometimes we come up to communion, we're reminded of our sin because we recognize that it represents that Jesus died on the cross for sin. And you may be saying, my sin is big. And I'm going to tell you, that's why the Son of God had to die for it, because he's big. But sometimes we come up to this and we get this sense of shame. Do you know what these tables are? We're at this conference and this guy said it like this. He said, it's not shame on you, it's shame off you. That's what this is. The communion tables, the life and the death and the resurrection of Jesus Christ is shame off you. It's not shame on you. It's not you come every time and say, I know I'm so horrible and awful. He knows all that. And he says, but I've forgiven you, and I've given you life, and I've given you freedom, and you've been washed clean, and the guilt is all gone. And now it's shame off you. And now it's a new day. It's a new game. It's a new life. And it's a new life for you and for me today. It's all new. So we do communion to remember that we've been made new and we've been forgiven through Jesus Christ. And that means that that's why today can be a victory. If you're the same old you, there's no way today could possibly be a victory or tomorrow. Maybe you can get through one day, but that's it. But in Jesus, it's a whole new game. Shame off you and his grace on you. We call it good news. It's really great news is what it is, right? It's the good news is new life. The good news is victory in him. So I'm going to invite our worship team to come on up, and I'm going to pray. I want to invite you to pray with me. And maybe we just want to take a minute and take our thing and say, God, I know this is where I'm going to trip. And so I want to decide today. So let me invite you to pray with me. Maybe it's a prayer like this. God, we come to you as people who have things that are going to trip us up. And we can play head games, but we know that they're real. And we have envy and jealousy and anger and all kinds of things. We know they're real. And so we want to just bring them to you again. And as we bring them to you, lay them down and be decided. To decide no to them and yes to you. And as we do that, God, we come and we say, again, we want to just drink in your forgiveness. And we want to just drink in your hope. Drink in the renewal that we need. And God, you say we have this spirit, your spirit in us. And so we pray for your spirit to work powerfully in us and through us. Because we know victory comes from you. So God, would you enable us to find the, not just be decided, but also to be strategic. Show us when we need to run. Give us the wisdom we need for these things this week, and we know it's only going to be through you. And Jesus, some of us, we come to you and we recognize that we want to come back to you today. And so we just say to you, here we are to come back to you. To once again say, you're our God. To once again say, you're our Lord. Some of us, we come and we say, I'm ready to receive you into my life. Because me running, it doesn't work. And so we invite you in. All together recognizing that we need you and that we can trust you. And we lift these things in Jesus' name. Amen.